Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It from WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. And to borrow a phrase, speak, friend, and enter the Morgan Library. Tolkien, maker of Middle-earth, now on display at the Morgan through May 12th, offers a unique opportunity to see more than 100 rare artifacts and documents that provide glimpses into the mind of the seminal fantasy author J.R.R. Tolkien. The exhibition, which originated last year at the Weston Library in Oxford, features manuscripts, illustrations, maps, and designs that illuminate The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, and I'm going to ask you to say the third book's name.
The Silmarillion.
Silmarillion. Thank you so much. It also includes family photographs and other items that trace Tolkien's life from his childhood through university and World War I and his subsequent years as a scholar at Oxford. Richard Ovenden, who is Bodley Librarian's Senior Executive Position of Oxford Libraries. Nice to meet you.
Hi.
And John McQuillan.
Yes.
Thank you. Assistant Curator at the Morgan Library. We really appreciate you coming into the studio.
Thank you for having us.
So we all know The Lord of the Rings. I was flashing back to when I read The Hobbit the first three times as a kid. But I actually realized I don't know when they were released. When were these two books released, Hobbit and Lord of the Rings?
So The Hobbit goes back to the 1930s. So 1937 was the UK publication, and the following year in the US. And what you'll see in the show that's at the Morgan is some of the original illustrations which Tolkien did, first for the UK edition, which was in black and white, so kind of Depression era, mm-hmm. austerity, but also a bit of British taste. And then when the American publishers thought...
What does British taste mean?
tight-fisted, I think. but when the American edition was being mooted with an American publisher, they said, no, we've got to have colour illustrations. And I think Tolkien must have been delighted at this because he went away immediately and drew some wonderful watercolours illustrating the scenes in The Hobbit, which duly appeared in the US edition. And you'll see the original watercolours in the Morgan show.
John, I'm going to ask you about that third book. I'm going to ask you to say it again.
The Silmarillion.
Silmarillion. Where does this fit into the rest of the work and also his life's work, the way he felt about his work?
The Silmarillion was actually literally his life's work. He began working on it when he was a teenager, an undergrad at Oxford in the 19-teens, and continued working on the narratives and the stories throughout the rest of his life. And unfortunately, the work was never published in his lifetime. And it was only after his death that his son, Christopher Tolkien, was able to edit together the amount of material and different versions of the stories that Tolkien kept writing and rewriting and reworking into something of a little bit more coherent and cohesive narrative.
That's so interesting. Do we know why he was fixated on this particular work?
I think it was part of his kind of broader conception of this mythology that he created, a series of legends and histories of an invented world. And really, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings are really just sort of almost like coders to a great epic sweep of history, of language, of culture that he conjured up from his own knowledge of European and Icelandic and Nordic legends and myths and stories, which he knew as a scholar absolutely intimately. And he was so immersed in that world that it was almost inevitable, I think, that he would, as somebody of his creative bent, would create this extraordinary new world.
I think for a generation, I went immediately to the books because I'm a lady of a certain age. But I think certain people remember only the movies. They know the movies. They know the visuals. How do his drawings and his watercolors and his paintings, how do they compare to the art direction in the films? Are they similar? Or are they?
I think there are clear moments when some of Tolkien's illustrations, particularly those published for The Hobbit, have been used directly and kind of quoted from in the different visual adaptations, the the cartoon version of The Hobbit from the 1970s, as well as the more recent Peter Jackson films. You can see direct quotations from his work, but then the creator's own imagination also takes a hold and takes over, and they become sort of almost a cooperation between Tolkien and the movie maker.
But I'd like to suggest that the show at the Morgan will encourage people back to the text, particularly those people who have only known the films. And the films are wonderful, but I think the great power of Tolkien's writing
is that
thank you.
So those stories enable you to conjure up a world of your mm-hmm. own, in your own head. And because they're so evocative, the writing is so compelling and so colourful in its use of language that that's one of the great joys, I think, that you can get from coming to see the show and mm-hmm. going back to the books. And that's one of the things that I'd encourage New Yorkers to head to Madison Avenue and go and experience that for yourself. And that's certainly what we found in the Bodleian Library in Oxford when we had the show last summer, was that people were going back to the books. People who'd never read the books were inspired. And that's what I think could happen here.
My guests are Richard Avedon and John McQuillan. We're talking about Tolkien, Maker of Middle-earth, currently at the Morgan. It'll be there until May 12th. So I'm curious, where was all this work before? Where was it being stored? Who had it?
Three stories underground in the center of Oxford in a climate-controlled vault, carefully curated by Catherine McIlwain, the mm-hmm. Tolkien archivist, who's sort of originated the show, which is now on at the Morgan, and John has brilliantly set it in the New York galleries here. So we've had it really since shortly after Tolkien died. His son began to place mm-hmm. the archive with us. It's been added to over the decades since, and the show that we have is not the first exhibition of Tolkien's work. We did one in the 1980s, but this is the first that's travelled and the first that has really shown the complete range of Tolkien's life and his brilliance, his genius. So it tells a story of him as a son, as a child, mm-hmm. his early years. It shows him as a student and then in the First World War as a combatant and the experience that very profoundly had on him. And then his life as an academic, first as a member of staff on the Oxford English Dictionary, and then as a scholar of English language and literature, as a philologist. And he comes back to Oxford as a very young professor. He had a very distinguished position called the Rawlinson and Bosworth Professor of Anglo-Saxon at Pembroke College. And so he was very young to get that very distinguished post. And
I enjoyed you saying that.
all the way through, he's, you know, teaching students and doing his own very erudite research. He just can't wait to get back to the legends of Middle-earth and to begin to, you know, and to work through over almost his whole life, as John was saying.
And I think one thing that a lot of your listeners and the museum visitors will find surprising is that the actual manuscripts for The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings live in America. They are housed at Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A librarian at Marquette contacted J.R.R. Tolkien in the late 50s and requested to buy the manuscripts. And Tolkien sold them to him. So actually, there is a good chunk of the history of Middle-earth that is in America.
Middle America.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems appropriate. There's also in there's a accompanying book, we'll talk about it in a moment, but there are these amazing letters from people like C.S. Lewis to him. Why was it important to include the letters? And what did you learn from the letters? What can someone learn from the letters?
Well, I think Tolkien was part of a group of friends and yeah. scholars who met in Oxford and were very connected to each other. They shared the drafts of their work. They read aloud in various smoke-filled pub rooms. And they had a kind of very deep connection to each other. And so there's that group of letters are very revealing about this friendship and kind of creative sounding boards that they provided for each other. So, you know, the Narnia Chronicles mm-hmm. and Middle Earth are kind of conjured up at the same time. And there were other scholars too. But what we also find in the letters, and you'll see a very moving one from Joni Mitchell, is mm-hmm. that there's a whole series of fan letters.
The fan letters
from
are great.
Extraordinary people, like the person who is now the Queen of Denmark, or you know, Terry Pratchett, W.H. Auden. So mm-hmm. there's an incredible range of people who at the time were absolutely blown over by these books, and unexpected people, and you know, I think that's still true today.
What is something, we have a few minutes left, that a true Tolkien fan will just geek out about seeing? They'll just be so excited to see in this.
I think there is any number of items. We have the original. Tolkien's original working map for Lord of the Rings that he worked on from 1937 until about 1950. It is a well-loved and well-used map, but that is the map that drove the narrative. We have one of the earliest poems and illustrations he ever produced related to Middle-earth from 1915, and sort of one of the birth moments of the Silmarillion and the Tale of Arendelle. And again, as Richard had mentioned, the watercolors for The Hobbit, I think people will be, they absolutely grab you because they are so vibrant. They have been preserved so well. They are so beautifully composed. The colors are brilliant. They are really beautiful objects to see in person.
And I'd like to echo John's comments, and there are a variety of other art pieces in the show that we've brought from Oxford to the Morgan, which are show a side of his genius that I think people have not sufficiently appreciated. And I think seeing those in his own hands, some of them he would do crosswords in a newspaper and just use the rest of the newspaper just to doodle. And it kind of shows that kind of creative mind working all the time. And I think they're almost as moving as these very polished watercolors.
Do you have a favorite piece? That's unfair,
ooh,
isn't it?
Oh, I think actually the draft for the dust jacket of The Hobbit in Tolkien's own hands with the kind of instructions to the printer. And it's so beautiful, so colourful. And just go and enjoy it.
Richard Avedin and John McQuillan. The show is Tolkien, Maker of Middle Earth. Avedin. I've said your name wrong. I'm saying Avedin. It's a beautiful name. Richard Avedin. Thank you so much for being with us. Again, the piece is Tolkien, Maker of Middle Earth. It is currently at the very lovely Morgan Library. This has been All of It on WNYC.